Bud Steen Show presented by Mobile One and the University of Alberta Golden Bears football alumni.
Terrific weekend.
It was. Have you seen the Foo Fighters?
You know, I haven't seen the Foo Fighters. I don't own any Foo Fighters, but I know that Mark is relatively accurate in saying that they are big. That is going to be a huge show, and I don't know. Maybe I need to drag my 63-year-old butt down to experience what the next generation.
Let's all go to the Foo Fighters, all three of us. Sure. How about that?
All right.
Right. Then maybe you can man up and go to the rodeo next year. Okay. Have you ever been to the rodeo, Steen?
Oh, I love the rodeo.
Yeah, I know. He's never been to the rodeo.
Oh, good God, man. You got to watch those girls ride those horses. It is incredible what they can do with those animals. I just love it.
I'll mark it down for next year. I'm taking a lot of heat for skipping the rodeo.
Oh, God, you can't. I mean, it is huge in Edmonton. I mean, we really need the CFR, and we support the CFR extremely well. So anyway, we're on about football.
All sports, it's all good.
Yep.
So I want to start with probably the biggest play of the weekend was the BC Montreal game. What was it? First down at their 8, then they throw an incomplete pass, so it's second down in their 8. Illegal procedure takes them back to their 4. So now they're second down and 19 yards to go from their 4. Take me through what happened next, bud.
You know, it's interesting, but every once in a while, you get to see something you've never seen before. And I just happened to be in front of a television in the media center at Commonwealth and looked up and watched it unfold. BC was having a tough afternoon. Let there be no doubt in anyone's mind about that. And on that series, they actually got a couple of penalties. So they were back, as you said, second down and 19. They throw the ball to the wideout, who's way out in the flat at the bottom, and he catches the ball in the goal area, and he takes a step. And the next thing you know, he's kicking the football. And he doesn't kick it very far. He just kind of pooch kicks it. And then one of his teammates runs over and tries to recover. Planned play, no question. Those guys weren't freelancing, but an incredible challenge for the official on the spot because there were so many different rules that came into play in 1 or 2 seconds that the young man that ruled on all of it really just did a heck of a job. There's a whole bunch of rules that you've got to understand what BC was doing. First rule is Rule 4, Section 6, Article 3. The continuity of downs is interrupted when the ball, having been kicked, other than dribbled, crosses the line of scrimmage. It's repeated in a little bit different language in Rule 5, Section 4, Article 8, where it says that the kicker may recover a kick across the line of scrimmage, in which case the ensuing down shall be first down, whether or not the original yardage has been gained. All right. Now, was it a kicked ball or was it a dribbled ball? Because a dribbled ball is something different in the Canadian Football League. For it to be a kicked ball, the ball must be struck by a player's foot or leg below the knee. And that doesn't mean that the ball is accidentally struck. You know, envisage a punt laying on a punt is fumbled, laying on the ground, and somebody comes over and it just goes off his foot and goes out of bounds. He hasn't kicked it out of bounds. A dribbled ball occurs when the ball is kicked while not in possession or control of a player. That is, it's just laying loose on the ground and someone intentionally kicks it. So in this particular case, the official had to make a decision whether the ball had been kicked or dribbled. If he decides that it was a kick, was it behind the line of scrimmage or in front of the line of scrimmage? Were there any of his mates, any Team A players? Remember, Team A is the offense. Were there any Team A players on side that is, beside or behind him when he kicked it? And if not, did the BC players give yards to the Montreal players that might have been attempting to recover the possession? And then finally, and this is the really interesting part and the probably the most difficult part of it, did any Montreal Team B players interfere with the guy that kicks the ball prior to his crossing the line of scrimmage? And this is all going full blast.
But Iannuzzi never kicked. He never crossed the line of scrimmage.
He got knocked down at the line of scrimmage. So he catches the pass. He takes a step. He's a yard behind the line of scrimmage. He kicks it.
Like it looked like he wanted to punt the ball.
No question. He kicked that ball because it went off his shin, not his foot. He wasn't kicking it very far, and the play, as designed, would have him run up and fall on it on the 6-yard line. Result, 1st and 10 for BC.
Right.
Unfortunately, he kicked it a little bit far, and Montreal got over very quickly, and as soon as he kicked the ball and took a step, they jumped on him.
Right.
So he's laying at about the 5.
Yeah, now because he was behind the line of scrimmage when he kicked it, because I just watched the play again, he's at the 2-yard line, the line of scrimmage was the 4. Does that change anything?
Nope.
Like it makes it legal. And all he had to do, and we had talked about this play earlier in the year when we were talking about plays that we've never seen the team should do, is if you kick the ball, all you have to do is regain coverage across the line of scrimmage.
Correct.
And it's an automatic first down.
1st and 10, that's right.
So BC clearly knew the rule.
Yep.
They just didn't execute it.
Not particularly well for them on that particular day. And you're not going to see that play again probably for another 5 years, because now the coaches are all well aware, tuned into it. Everybody's going to know it. And, somebody's got to lose coverage actually on that receiver to allow him the ability to run up a couple of yards.
But they were whistled no yards on the play.
Right, because the man that touches the football is offside of the kicker. That is, he's closer to the Montreal goal line when the ball is kicked. So just like in any punt situation, he has to allow the Montreal team 5 yards.
Okay, so Iannucci, if he kicks it, any teammate can recover it, or only Iannucci?
Only Iannucci, okay. Or anyone behind him.
Okay. Hmm.
Yeah, it was really great officiating. I understand what BC was doing. And, it just didn't work out for them, like many other things Sunday afternoon. It was, a little bit of a lopsided football game.
It was a very unique play, something you don't see very often.
Not at all.
Now, a lot of Eskimo fans are curious about when the Eskimos had the pass interference, when there was not enough evidence to overturn it. Now, all the TSN TV guys were saying they thought it was an obvious pass interference call. That's what they were saying in the booth.
Right. You're talking about the second one.
Yes.
Late in the game. So, what we saw was the Saskatchewan receiver come into close proximity with the defender on the play, and he essentially didn't show us that he had any interest in getting away from that particular defender. The defender had his hand on him, no question about it, but he wasn't restraining him in any way, and the Saskatchewan player did not move away from him. He was happy to just cuddle in there and then perhaps make a break on the ball at the last second. There was no grab by the Edmonton player. When the review started, the field judge put the headset on and actually said exactly what we could see on television and told us what I've just said to you, that there didn't seem to be a clear intent on the Saskatchewan player to get away from the defender. And so in his opinion, the Edmonton defender did not interfere with his ability to catch the ball in any way. So had we seen an angle that may have provided different information, then we perhaps could have made a different decision. But based upon what we heard from the field judge and what we saw from TSN, there was nothing there.
Bud Steen joins us inside the stripes. brought to you by Mobile One and the University of Alberta Golden Bears football alumni. Overall, you know, there wasn't a lot of controversy in the Edmonton Saskatchewan game. You know, which is really, I know you've talked about this many times. Yeah. The officials don't want that. You were the evaluator of that game. When you look back on it, what was the? I don't know if you can you give us the rating overall for the game?
I felt it was a very well officiated football game. In particular, I thought that the referee did a very good job of administration of the game, or management of the game. That was keeping the players focused on football, you know, making sure that his guys were breaking up the little yip fests that go on in tense games, making sure that nothing got physical between the plays. He did a very, very good job of that. I felt that it was a very, very well officiated game. It's highly unlikely that we're going to get through 60 minutes of football without an error. And were there errors made in that football game? Yes, but they were very minor and they did not have an impact on the outcome of the game. And, you know, I certainly congratulated the guys. I completed the evaluation and my comments to all of them were very, very, very positive because I felt that they did a very good job. So they should be proud of the game. They had no impact on the outcome.
Hey, Bud, why in a video review should the field judge be able to sway the replay booth at all? Shouldn't it be a completely unbiased review of the play? Obviously, what he's seen was somewhat wrong, or there wouldn't have been a review.
No, we are certainly entitled to speak to the official who was primarily responsible on the play. And my recollection on that particular play, it was the number three receiver on the top on the bottom, who was coming over. And so the field judge would have watched him right from the snap of the ball. So we want to know what he saw and how he made his decision. It's not a question of bias. It's not a question of influence. We just need that information. And when we heard what he had to say and it was identical to what we saw, we were fine and left it.
We've had a lot of texts from people wondering how Saskatchewan was able to when they'd used their timeout, but they were still able to challenge the pass interference in the final 3 minutes of the ball game. You're allowed two timeouts a game,
yes,
but it's carried over now. It never used to be, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay, it carries over now. That's the difference.
If you do not use a timeout in the first half, now you've got two in the second half. It doesn't matter how many timeouts that you have coming into the last 3 minutes of the game, or how many challenges you have, either your freebie or your second or potential third. Remember, if you get your first two right, you have a third. You only have one kick at it in the last 3 minutes. You only have one timeout available, and you only have one challenge available.
So that explains it, because I know there's people on the sidelines like, no, I'm pretty sure now they changed. Now, what year was it that they changed the rule for the carryover? It's kind of recent, is it not?
It would have been in the last 5 years.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought, because there was a lot of people saying, hey, wait a second. But so that's good. People are paying close attention.
Yes,
but
they are.
Indeed, now which makes sense. I never understood why because it kind of forced teams to just call a timeout for the sake of calling a timeout.
That's right.
Why not? If you have two in the game, and there's no reason to call one in the first half, why waste it?
Yeah, use it when it's critically necessary.
Now, this weekend for the finals, we'll see some officials who weren't officiating in the semifinals. Are they automatically graded higher? Like, are these the guys now who have a better chance of going to the Grey Cup?
Not necessarily. It's interesting, but as the games, as we proceed down the playoff path, so to speak, the games tend to get a little bit easier. When we were putting together the assignments, the vice president and those of us that were making recommendations said to one another, you know, semifinals can be really nasty football games, and we need to have, frankly, our strongest officials there. So I wouldn't say that the guys that are working this weekend that didn't work last weekend are necessarily higher rated than last week.
Okay. The weather. Now, you were out at Eskimo practice on Friday doing the officiating thing that you've done with other guys throughout the year, and it was blistery cold on Friday.
It was brutal. the temperature really wasn't that low. I think it was about 16 below, but there was very high humidity and there was a wind. And notwithstanding putting on a brave face in front of the team, it just cut right to the bone. It was one of the coldest days I've ever been on a football field. And, you know, like, let's just say that the second I got off, I went straight into the media room and got a cup of coffee so I could warm my hands up and try to get my insides warm. It was crazy, crazy. And the players, it certainly affected the players, I can tell you that.
So how do you think it impacts the officials? There's some talk, of course, Len Rhodes and the Stampeders hopefully wanting to move the games back. Now, we always joke, hey, just eliminate two games and go back to 16 games. Yeah. That would do it. But I know money is not going to allow that to happen. Right. How much do you find it would impact from an officiating standpoint having games with better weather? Does it matter?
Well, does it matter? I would like to believe that if you are in good physical condition, have the proper equipment on, and are at the peak of your mental preparation, the cold shouldn't affect you. Now, that's well and good in theory. I have seen some games that, from an officiating perspective, that were so cold that by the end of it, I think everybody was affected. The players were certainly affected, and I believe that the officials were affected by it. I would certainly welcome a move. Having said that, the discussion in the article related to two clubs. Whether or not you can get enough of the clubs interested in a move is something entirely different, because one of the things that we've seen historically is that in some of the cities, Winnipeg in particular, the crowds go down during the summer months because everybody heads out to the lake. You got a game on the weekend, Winnipeg is empty. Everybody's out at the lake. So the crowds go down in the summertime, and they need the bigger crowds in the fall to fill up the bank account. So you might not get the same decision made from province to province. You know, I can't.
It's really and you know what? If that was a concern to me, the way to get around that is if you start 2 weeks earlier, you just have Winnipeg play more road games earlier in the year, one or two more, and it evens out. Like, I think there are ways if there are major concerns for some markets rather than others. But I would like to look at. And Winnipeg hasn't had a playoff game for a while, so that's part of it. But, you know, the temperature when it's cold out, I think, is a bigger deterrent for some people than going away for a weekend.
Well, I would not disagree at all. Right. You know, in reading the article, Len Rhodes is absolutely correct. It was disappointing to see 27,000 and change at the stadium on Sunday for... obviously, the biggest football game that Edmonton has hosted in a number of years. If this game had been played 2 weeks ago, there would have been 40,000 people there. End of story. No question about it, because it was nice, and people would have had a big walk up. I think there's some merit in it.
Now the other one is, because we get a lot of fans asking this question about, do you see any benefit to moving the playoff games to Saturday instead of Sunday? Some think that traveling people would be more likely to go on a Saturday because then they wouldn't have to rush home and go to work. Now, that's, to me, a pretty significant change, because you've always had the playoffs on a Sunday.
Well, I'm reeling back. I'm going back in the Wayback Machine. Yeah, I can't remember doing a playoff game on a Saturday.
Yeah, me neither.
But would that make a difference? Well, travel. So Saskatchewan fans coming to Edmonton from Saskatchewan, if the game's on a Saturday, they got to take Friday off of work. Doesn't matter.
Or some leave early in the morning, right? Because the regular season games, they always find ways. Who knows?
I suppose. Frankly, right? A lot of them just crawl out of their homes in Edmonton and put on their green and white.
That's true, too.
You know, there were green and white jerseys at the Eskimo pregame party for season ticket holders. There are Saskatchewan fans that are season ticket holders to Commonwealth Stadium. So having said that, I don't know Saturday versus Sunday whether that would make any difference, but certainly if you started the season a little bit earlier, you might find that you've got a few more bums in seats, and you know that'll make a big difference to a ball club.
So ultimately, from an officiating standpoint, though, doesn't the cold weather is not that big of a factor?
Not really. Our guys are making enough money; they can buy the gitch necessary to stay warm, hopefully. And we get help from the teams. Dwayne Mandrusiak was very generous with the guys this weekend, made sure everybody had hot shots so that they were keeping their appendages warm. And, you know, if anybody got cold, we could do something about it. You know, interesting comment about the footballs and the bladders and the balls exploding. There was never an issue for the game because the bags that we use to store the all of the balls in, remember that we've got kicking balls and offense balls now, yeah, is heated, and all we have to do is plug it in. So those bags were plugged in. Those balls were nice and warm for the whole game this past weekend.
Is that new?
Yeah. This year, because
this is the first year you've had the heated bag.
Yeah, yeah. Because we've got bigger bags now. So we got more balls in place.
So that would make a big impact in the kicking game in the cold weather, because the ball used to be so cold. You know, guys would talk about how, man, the ball felt heavier and it was harder to hit, and they didn't hit it. They felt at times it didn't fly with the same consistency they're used to. So yeah, this should actually be a benefit to the kickers in the kicking game in the playoffs.
I totally agree with that. I could not imagine kicking a ball that's been sitting out for 3 hours at 20 below. It would be like kicking a post with your foot. You know, it'd be just awful.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, no.
Well, Bud, we'll be back. We'll know who's going to the Grey Cup next week. Appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely.